Today we're continuing our series. Since we came back to live meetings, I've done a series of talks on really how we recover, recovery from alcoholism, what the process is. I thought that would be a good review. I did one talk on the building the arch to freedom, how we use steps 1 through 9 to walk through the arch, a free man into the world of the spirit. And I use this handout, it's a PDF on the site, on this picture of the world where I lived in, which was not a pretty place, and the world of the spirit and how we get there, because that's what it's all about. And then I did one talk on Thought 74, where I hammered home the idea of what is the first step. Is the first step voluntary? Now, the Oxford Group first step was surrender, but their surrender was a decision, a turning away from our will to God's will. But I believe the first step, and I'm sure people don't agree with me, I was surrendered, I was beaten, I was defeated. And I thought about something you might want to ask a newcomer if you're working with them. Have them get out a sheet of paper, I think they can do that, they can handle that, and have them draw a line down the middle of it, because you know, it's hard to follow directions, like call me every day, that's very complicated. You know, that a lot of people can't seem to grasp that. And put on one side what alcohol did for me, and then on the other side what it did to me. And see where the balance is. And if you still are 50-50, you're not defeated. And I think you need to be 0-100. And that comes from seeing the truth of what I'm powerless over alcohol. I can never manage my life. I had no choice because I was defeated. If you're surrounded by quicksand and alcohol is your master, do you really have a choice? And that's what Bill W. describes on page 8 in his story. He was in a bitter morass of self-pity, a swamp of self-pity. Quicksand surrounded me. Alcohol was my master. And that's the way I felt. And I don't want to forget that. I don't ever want to forget that moment, because if I do, I'll relive it. And people can have moments like that, but then they forget. And the ego will rebuild quickly. So sober is when you're without God, but the ego's still hanging around. And you're still living a life run on self-will, so your emotions get out of whack. And remember, we use alcohol to treat our emotions. Alcohol is a treatment for our emotional disorder, which is narcissism. A narcissistic personality disorder, and we treat that with alcohol. It works for a while, but it stops working. As our disorder gets worse, the alcohol works less. And so that moment of truth leads you to seek the answer. That's what AA is supposed to do with the new person, help them see their truth. And so step one, admitting you're powerless over alcohol, is after you first fully concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, and that that's the first step in recovery, and where you fully concede to yourself that you can't manage crap, that you have screwed up your life, and that it's unmanageable. Now, you may realize a lot of people come in, their lives are unmanageable, but it's because of them. Anybody have that? It's a them unmanageability, but as you work the steps, you see it's you. But it is unmanageable. It's completely unmanageable. And it's not just the DUI or the wife throwing you out of the house, because you can always get another place to live. It's when you can't live with yourself anymore. You can't live with yourself in any kind of peace, and you're just done. I like to remember the fear. Anybody have fear when they came in here? That total fear of everything. And it was terrible. Why do we have fear? Because we didn't have God. So I talked a lot about that. I wrote a brilliant thought, number 74. If you don't think it's brilliant, don't tell me. It's okay. My sponsees know I don't handle criticism well. Step 70, on thought 75, I talked about what's required when you're defeated. You believe that you can have a power that can help you. Is that complicated? Now, for an alcoholic to truly give up on himself to believe that he needs help is a big deal. And it's perfect help. It can't be like half perfect help. I need perfect help because I'm perfectly hopeless. And I have to be humbled and humiliated to know that I need a power. And I need that today. And that's what we're going to talk about if I ever get to the thought today. May not make it. And then, and how do you know that there's perfect help available? Because you can see it in the rooms. And you can feel it. You can feel that God is there for you. You're beginning to start the relationship by turning to Him. Now, a lot of people turn a little bit. And they'll come to AA to get the heat off, you know, and this and that. Those people don't, they're not defeated, they can't help it, they're not bad, they just don't, it doesn't happen. But when you're completely defeated, you're willing to go to any length. You're willing to seek that power, so you're willing to come here and do whatever it says. And we're only supposed to ask one question when I come here: what do I have to do? And if you don't know what to do, that's why we study the big book, because it tells you what they did. Now, if you have a book that you like that works, that's fine. But if you don't, try this. You can go to treatment. They have their whole plan, 30 days. At 30 days, you get a lot of information, which you use to further your self-knowledge of how wrong they are and how you have issues, and you're going to watch for your issues. You're going to watch, you're going to change the way you see things on your own. And then they talk about God and they tell you to go to AA. And treatment's not bad because a lot of people need to get away from their environment and they really can't do it. Treatment is great, but it's more of a respite. It's a respite from the chaos that you're in. It should be called a respite center, but you can't charge insurances for respite. And they're great. Treatment's great. You know, I'm not down on it at all. It's saved my life, everybody's life. But unless you follow that through the actions of the steps, I don't know what you get. I've seen a lot of people come here who have been to treatment for 30 days, and I've seen very few stay. I don't know what happens to the rest of them. Stu's always checking the... Stu checks the mug shots to see it's sick, but to see who he has a sick personality, to see who we worked with, and it's very sad. It's very sad, and this is a serious disease, and we're all dying without this. And so we have hope. We believe that there's a power that can help us. Everybody agree that? And it's perfect power. It has to be a perfect power. They say it in the book, but it's subtle. It has to be a power you can depend on. They say, got on page, 90-something, it says, you have to have a power that you can depend on, especially at 3 in the morning when things are turning to crap in your head, and you can rely on that power. And then the decision in step 3 is the surrender in the Oxford group. We put the first two steps in because this book is written for hopeless people. It says in the foreword, we had a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, a hopeless condition of mind and body is not good. And it has to be completely hopeless, and you have to know you're completely hopeless. And then they'll tell you what they did, and if you do what they did, you'll see what you have. This is an experiment, AA. This is you're taking an experimental medicine, this 12-step program. You're find the directions in the book, and then you tell us what's happened. And that's why birthdays really are important, because you can I see people came in and they didn't look good. We should take everybody's mugshot when they come in the room. We should talk to their family and have them record a 5-minute message and then see where their lives are. And it's so powerful, the change that's happened in people's lives. And so step three in the Oxford group was you surrender and you make a decision. In AA, it's very complicated, and people work on it a long time, that you're going to fire yourself. You're going to hand in your resignation letter to God, and you're going to put your life in a God box, and you're going to say, God, I give you my life. I'm not going to play God anymore. Now, that's good. You can put in the God box and still play God. That's why the decision, unless followed by action, won't work. And it's going to be action that's going to take the rest of your life. You're never done. A lot of people have called me, well, I want to finish the steps, and I'm on 4. I need to finish 4 so I can do 10. And I was thinking I'm going to talk a little bit about 10, but I may not get to it. How that we need to live this every day, and you can start practicing it every day. It's not hard to pray in the morning. Does it require and ask God for direction? To pause whenever you're agitated or doubtful or you're disturbed and ask God for the right thought or action. It doesn't take long to watch for your selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they crop up, ask God at once to remove it. So the decision in step three is, I'm not going to play God anymore. It didn't work. I don't want to run the world. Now, you can do steps 10 and 11 better if you've done 4 and 5 and seen that your life run on self-will is full of fear. Fear. Why? You're self-reliant. That's my favorite line in the book. Self-reliance failed me. I don't know if I signed somebody's book, I'm going to write. Self-reliance failed you. It failed me. And it failed me because it didn't work. And I was relying on me to wrest satisfaction, happiness out of life if I managed well. And I certainly tried to manage. I tried to manage this morning. And I was given a management lecture. Because DirecTV is coming out to change the dish and to put in new receivers because I got the 8K TV. And I want to make sure that the new remote, universal remote, will work on the new receiver. And I received, God talked to me and said, would you stop already? They know how to do this, but I'm an alcoholic, you understand. And you know, so I had a moment of pausing there, and guess what, I just laugh at myself. Who can, nobody can relate to that? You're not there, of course they're gonna do it wrong. Okay. All right, I'm not the only one. So you make a decision in step three. And then, but you can't really do the rest of the steps well until you unblock all these resentments you have and see the truth of them. These people that you've been disturbed by, see that they may not have been as bad as you thought they were, and you were worse than you thought you were. And how it's really our mistakes that cause these resentments. And it's our character defects, and it's our separation from God. Because we are told in the big book, we don't have to get angry. Anybody agree with that? And anger is a killer, and who tells us to get angry? We do. Why? Because we don't like the script. So God says, Michael, this is the script. You're reading the wrong script. They are who they are. Keep your mouth shut. Say the prayer. And then we have fear, and we have to see that our fear is because I'm relying on me to manage my life. And we all have fear. Now I know it's not true. It doesn't even exist. It's in the future. Anger only exists in the past, so if I'm angry for 20 seconds, I'm bringing it into the future. And I hate it when I'm disturbed and I'm bringing somebody into my head while I'm sitting in my chair. So ridiculous. I just go like this. I just smack myself. And it's silly, but we all do it. So 10 and 11 is where we learn how to not do that and live like that. But 4 and 5 shows the truth, shows us our truth. So we can try to practice God's character, this card, the spiritual checklist, all day long. And I still remember many days at work where it was on the desk, but it was covered up, and I was on the wrong side. And I had some higher powers at work. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. And they'd say, "Doctor, you've covered up the list. You're over on the wrong side. We can take care of this. It'll work out. You understand? Am I the only person that's insane?" And so I use that card now. Now that I'm retired, I have other things I could get upset with, but I have this right next to my chair. I have it in the car. I don't need to look at it anymore. I know if I'm disturbed, I'm on the wrong side. I'm either in fear, or my pride's hurt, or my self-esteem, or some ambition, or something. And then we learn about our relationships and how we harm people. It's not pretty. And then we make a list of everybody we harm from those three inventories. And those are the people we need to be willing to make amends. Now, you've forgiven everybody. If you've done a good fourth step, you've forgiven everybody you were ever angry at. And then you're going to have to do it today, the same prayers today when you get upset. It's a sign of a, you have to keep doing it. Why? Because they're out there. They're just out there waiting to disturb me. Can you imagine, you wake up in the morning, you're Michael the Magnificent, and these people are plotting to disturb you. It's so ridiculous, isn't it? Carl, you ever get like that? Yeah, Carl.
Every day,
all the time. Yeah, they're out there waiting. They're waiting. And we've got a camera on. We don't want to miss it. And so we're just ridiculous. That's why when people celebrate years of sobriety and they say, "Well, I've never read the book," or "I don't work the steps," I'm not happy for them. I feel bad. But on the other hand, they may not have what I have, because I'm really ill. So I have to watch all the time. But I'm doing much better. My quality of life is good, and I feel okay. So 4 and 5 lead right into 6 and 7, which you do all the time. 8, you're willing to make amends. If you're not, go back and do the resentment again till you're willing, and then you make amends when to do so will not harm them or someone else. And you're not saying you're sorry all the time. You're sorry because I did this, because I yelled at you and didn't go to the ball game, because I was a bad father. I wasn't there for you. How you harm them. Not apologizing, because it says we don't apologize to anyone, right? But we want to make amends, which is different. So a lot of people do 8, 9 before they've done 4 and 5, and they don't like the results, and then AA doesn't work, and then they get self-pity, and then they drink. It's sad, but I've seen that a lot. Now, it doesn't take long really to do all that and to start practicing 10. So what I've described is how we move out of the world of my alcoholism into the real world where God is. Now, the problem is that I have to stay there. Now, you get there on page 83 when it says we have these promises. The promises occur when you have a relationship with God. Now, they're read as the 9-step promises, but when you're halfway through whatever, it could be the steps halfway through 9, you know something you know. You know this from God. God gives me a new freedom and a new happiness. God helps me not regret the past nor shut the door on it. God gives me serenity and peace. God will show me how my experience can benefit others. God will make the feeling uselessness and self-pity disappear. God helps me lose interest in selfish things. If I take credit for any of this, I'm screwed, because then it's the ego. God gives me the self-seeking just slips away. Where does it slip away? Is it when you're in the quick shop or at dinner? I mean, it slips away. It just happens. my whole attitude and outlook on life will change towards God and serving Him. Fear of people leaves me because I'm willing to make amends. It just leaves me. God does that through the fear prayers and the prayers of resentment. And I lose fear of economic insecurity. Why? Because I work for Him, and He's going to give me everything I need. This is how we should read the promises. Somebody won't like that either. We suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. Powerful, isn't it? And so, now, here's the problem with those promises. They can come true at 10 in the morning, and they can be gone at 11 o'clock. It's just, Chuck C. described it so well in his new pair of glasses. He was 15 years sober. He was the icon of AA on the West Coast. He loved the scriptures. He was a great man and a great speaker. He's sitting one day, he had a house that looked out on the Pacific near Catalina Island. It could look out. And he's sitting there in this chair, the same chair where he had the big book stuffed under for years till after he almost died, he sat in the chair and he saw this book. He said, well, maybe I need to read it now. But anyway, he said, damn. No, he doesn't cuss. He said, darn. I have to surrender every day. I have to surrender every moment. It's constant. Constant surrender. And the promises come true when I'm connected to God, and they leave me when I'm not with God. And so really, they're the world of the spirit promises. And then everybody chants, I don't know about you, but we chant here. They will always materialize if we work for them. Well, they'll always materialize every day if I'm working the steps every day. And if I don't work the steps every day, they're not going to materialize. Now, if you've never worked the steps and you come to AA, you need to know why you're powerless. You need to understand what your defeat is, how you can't manage your life, how you have no power to fix this, you're done, you're screwed. But God's available and can help you and loves you, and you believe He can, and you decide you're gonna turn your life and will over to His care, you're not gonna play God, and you're gonna give yourself to Him, and then 4, 5, 6, 7 unblocks your mind from the crap so you can see the truth. You don't want to live on selfishness, society, fear, and inconsideration, and impatience, and tolerance anymore. Why? It's not going to work. You're going to practice the opposite, and you're willing to make amends to all those people you harmed, and now you're in the world of the Spirit. So what did I write here? I can't even remember now. It says, in the previous three parts, I covered how I moved out of my self-centered world through the arch of freedom into the world of the Spirit. Now, I want to tell you, the world of the Spirit is a good place. And it says in the book, I'm paralleling it, that we continue to take this personal inventory that we've done in 4 through 9 all day long and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. What mistakes? Mistakes in thinking and action. You want to correct your thinking before you send the email. You want to correct your thinking before you get angry and act out. And I wrote, the promises on page 83 come true when we've entered this world. The book says we are now at step 10, so step 10 is how I keep the promises alive in my life every day. And then there's one paragraph that gives you the specific instructions on page 84. I've gone through it 18 trillion times. We watch with God in the world of the Spirit for selfishness, society, resentment, and fear, and I add in consideration. Now, you can wake up each day and you cannot watch with God, and you can just practice those things because they happen automatically. That's the way we normally react to things. It says, when these crop up, I'm entering my self-centered world. And before they're fully harvested, you see, you've planted them in your mind. You don't want to harvest it. You ask God at once to remove them. When these crop up, when they just even begin, you don't want to let your fear get too big or your anger. If you're disturbed at all, you're irritated, you need to ask God at once to remove them. If particularly disturbed, you need to discuss them with someone immediately. So you're doing steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 all the time. You want to stop. Practice God's character. You make amends immediately. What does immediately mean? Immediately. And then I add for myself, I have to forgive immediately. Forgive immediately. They are who they are. I'm wrong again. Wrong again. I was wrong this week about 8 or 10 times. I was probably wrong 20 times last week. I'm doing better. You know the difference between someone who's recovered and not is they don't know when they're wrong. They just don't know. And I know when I'm wrong, and then I have to admit it to myself and to God and another human being and make amends. It says, then we're told to turn my thoughts immediately away from who? Me. And what I want to how I can help others. This is how I stay in the world of spirit. When you're disturbed or upset, just say, my thoughts are in the wrong direction. Turn them around. Find somebody to help. I prayed this morning for 2 or 3 people that I think may need help. I'm going to reach out to them. And that's how I stay in the world of spirit. And what's the code? There's a secret code to living in the world of spirit. It's hidden in a box on the top of Mount Everest. Do you know what it says? Love and tolerance. That's it. And tolerance for me, and this is something I've learned, I don't have to love everybody, but I have to love them. I don't have to think that they're lovable. I have to love the unlovable. I may not be lovable. People have to love me. God loves me, and I am unlovable. And it doesn't matter what they're like, I have to love them, agape love. That's what Christ was talking about, agape love. And then tolerance is this, I have to put on this shield of armor. I put it out here, it's a shield that will block their, what I call, whatever they're doing from me being disturbed. I have to have a shield. And some days, it's like this thick glass. Some days it's very thin, and it gets through. Right, Margaret? It gets through. But I need to build this tolerance so it doesn't get through. So no matter what people do, I don't have to react. I want to react in fit spiritual condition, not unfit. And then those are the recovered promises. On page 85, that are never read at any meeting. We cease fighting anything, even alcohol. That's a good one. Sanity's return. Sanity in terms of my behavior and my thinking. I'm not acting on these insane thoughts I have. I'm not interested in liquor. I recoil from a hot flame. Why? Because I can only see what it's going to do to me, not for me anymore. Who does that? God. It says it happens automatically. I have a new attitude towards alcohol and life and everybody. Without any thought or effort on our part, it just comes. It happens if you're in the world of the spirit. Now you have to take the action to stay in the world of the spirit, but if you're in the world of the spirit, you have this power. You can't be in the world of the spirit and not have God's power. But you can be outside the world of spirit and have no power. So where do you want to live? Do you want to live with God or with yourself? Think about it. And yet we all choose ourselves a lot of the time. Why? We've been doing it our whole life. That's the way we're made. But we have a power now to bring us back. See, God will zap you. You don't feel good when you're out there. So you know when you're angry or fearful, and we don't like it anymore, at least I don't like it, I have moved back. Sometimes I like it a little while. You get it? You know, an hour, it feels good for a while, but then it really doesn't. It doesn't. And so we know, and we laugh at ourselves. If you take yourself too seriously in AA, you're in trouble. Wear a mask. But we don't have to be that person anymore. And it says, if I practice this way of living, I'll be in fit spiritual condition, and my reaction to life will be God-directed. And it says, the temptation replaced in neutrality. This is our experience. This is how we react, so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. So I want to be in fit spiritual condition. How do I do that? I keep working these steps, prayer, meditation, inventory all the time. But then there's a warning. There's a warning. It says, don't let up on this because you're screwed. You're headed for trouble. Alcohol is a subtle foe. Your emotions build up. You stop doing it. You live in your own world. Your emotions build up, and then you drink. Now, if you're sober a long time, it might be a long time before you take the drink, but you'll be miserable. Who wants to live that way? So you have a daily reprieve based upon your spiritual condition. And it says, I must carry a vision of God's will in all my activities. What do you think must means? And what's a vision of God's will in all my activities? To be his character. This is scripture, the right-hand side. Practice honesty, courage, consideration, humility, love, calm, patience. It's all, that's how God wants us to be. He wants us to be his character. He put his character inside of all of us. That's the power we have. Do we allow that to work or not? And then I wrote here, then when they give us directions at night on how we review all of this to see how well we did, and then they say, don't get into morbid reflection. Why? Because we don't do that well some days. And what does it ask us? These are really tough questions. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe anybody an apology? Was I kind and loving towards all? I love that one. I like to skip that one. What could we have done better? Or were we thinking of ourselves all the time? You see, if you're having a crappy day, why? You weren't kind and loving, you're thinking of yourself all the time. Were you thinking of others and what you could pack in the stream of life? It says don't get remorseful or worry, don't overwhelm yourself with how bad you did. But here's a powerful prayer. I ask God's forgiveness. God forgives me. But I have to ask and seek him and feel his forgiveness. And then guess what? There's an important line here. I inquire from who? God. What corrective measures should be taken? And that means that you go to sleep and you wake up and you'll see new way of looking at things. Isn't that great? And then, I'm talking too long, don't be mad. It says on awakening, we ask God's direction. We think about the 24 hours a day. Anybody wake up and think about themselves? Anybody not think about themselves? All right, it says, before you begin, stop right away, because you're screwed. You gotta ask God to come in and direct your thinking. It's not complicated. I need you today, God. Divorce my thinking from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Make my motives God's motives, how I can work for him, how I can serve him. On page 86, and under these conditions, I can use my mind. So I get my mind back on page 86, right? And I think on page 87, I get my will back. And then it says if I meditate on indecision, things that may come up, and then I'll pause before I react, right? And let and have negative reactions. And then it says, I be shown through the day. I pray, God, show me through the day what the next step is to be, and I be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. Now that's not, I do the next right thing. Have you ever heard that in a meeting? Has anybody ever heard that? Well, that got me here. That got me a wristband, because I didn't know what the next right thing was. I thought I was always doing the next right thing. Anybody else do that? But now we ask God, show me throughout the day what the next step is to be. And whenever I'm disturbed, I have to stop. And that's the pause, which we're going to get to. I be given whatever I need to take care of problems, and I ask God, especially freedom from self-will. And then it says, I don't pray for my selfish ends. And it says, that's where you get your will back. And it says, as you go through the day, this is how it ends. If you want to just remember one thing from all this babbling, you pause whenever anything's bothering you. Just pause and don't react. Don't say anything. Stop and say, God, I need you right now. You ask God for the right thought or action. And then here's the promise. And you have to remind yourselves that you made a decision not to run the show. And you humbly say to yourself, so I pause, I say, God, give me the right thought or action. I'm not running the show, which is why I'm disturbed. And I humbly say, thy will be done. That's not complicated, is it? Anybody ever forget to do it? I do. But if you do that, you're in much less danger. You see, we're always in a danger zone as alcoholics. See, we're in a danger zone of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. Anybody ever do that? And we become more efficient. Your day, you can help people better. You can help yourself. And you're not burning up energy foolishly as you did when you're trying to arrange the world. And you don't feel exhausted. And it says it works, it really does. And so that's, I write, I'm spiritually awake to that which has all power. And in these three meetings, I hope that I've been able to give a brief overview of how we achieve emotional sobriety, how we learn to live with God in the world of the Spirit, and then how we do it. That's why I started this meeting years ago, because I thought if people could follow these directions, they could live in the world of the Spirit. They wouldn't have to drink and die or use drugs and die in their car. So thank you, and I appreciate your attention, and we'll open it up.